Kelly O'Connell Show, Knockout Radio. Good morning. On 5:30, 2020, and I hope you're having a good day. I am myself not too bad, to be honest, but got a good show for you today. And going to focus on, more than anything, George Floyd, martyr, victim, and one hell of an excuse for chaos. So buckle up. Now, when George Floyd was killed by the Milwaukee police, you had to figure there would be a few protests. But did you realize there would be days or weeks of protests across the nation? And how could this be? First, the situation was mishandled by Mayor Frey, who's a very young guy and seemed very inexperienced, and the governor. They didn't see it coming, but how do you not see it coming? I mean, come on. I mean, this guy has a cops kneeling on him, and then he dies, and it's all on video. You'd have to be a moron to not see it coming. Second, neither had a plan that was up to the task. For example, the police should have been never been told to stand down while the rioters took over. But when the rioting started, they should have both sought intervention by state police, National Guard, and any federal officers available than the U.S. Army. Literally tens of thousands of such cops and troops are theoretically available. Beyond this, the most important thing is not being, quote, woke and overly sympathetic and outraged, but to remain in control. This guy Frey gets up on TV. He's upset. He wants the guy charged. He acts like he's going to cry. That's touching, but it's not leadership in my book. Now, in the aftermath, the rioting then spread across America and much destruction was done and is still being done. Now, how did the rioting spread so fast? Because, my friends, this has to do with socialism. Professional agitation groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa were ready for this event from already previously done planning and sent out rioters to invade big cities, is my theory. So many of these rioters were from out of the area and created massive damage and didn't care about it because they don't live there. Now, the clips from CNN's attack and the looting and burning of many businesses was harrowing, but you couldn't help think that had only Milwaukee been ready with training and more rubber bullet guns and tear gas and agreements with nearby sheriff's offices, it could have been all different. The bottom line, Marxism has been used repeatedly to bring low America, and this is just another case. Marx taught socialism needed a revolution before anyone would accept it, and he is still correct. What do you say to that? Now, a few other stories for you before we get back into that one. COVID. What do you think of COVID right now? And I have got, from the local area here, I've got a few statistics for you. And this is El Paso, the Panhandle area. Near the Panhandle in Texas. You've got 1,300 male cases and 1,300 female cases, just a few more female. Under 12, 131. Teens, 135. 20s, 471. 30s, 462, et cetera, et cetera. The biggest group is people in their 20s who have a good chance of getting better. Now, no deaths until you get to the 40s. 5 died in the 40s, 12 died in the 50s, 20 died in their 60s, 22 in their 70s, 13 80s, and 6 in their 90s. So deaths, 52 male, 26 female. That's in El Paso. I know it's a lot worse in other places. Now, there's a fight going on here in New Mexico over the state of that's El Paso. I want to make sure it wasn't New Mexico. Now, here in New Mexico, there's a fight over the restaurants. They're going to allow 50% occupancy, but outside in the patio, and only 25% inside. People are very angry. I don't think this particular governor, even though she is supposed to be on the short list for the vice president, is going to get reelected. Because why? Because she's just another dumb governor who acts like she knows everything, and her statements are made out of gold. or they come out of the sky or something. There's no reasoning with these people, and you know why? When you make something up, when you guess at something, sometimes people fight more in those situations. And why would that be? It's because you're already on shaky ground. So, and you don't want anybody challenging you. So, I know going across the nation, there's problems. Of course, I think the worst problems are in Michigan, where the governor is such a dummy and allowed her husband to call up and try to get a boat for Memorial Day, even though you're not supposed to be boating in Michigan for some stupid reason, which seems like the safest thing you could do besides going to Antarctica. So there is a lot of frustration out there, and I'm hoping that these Democrat governors who acted like they were gods are all kicked out of office, because that's not what our political system is supposed to be. It's supposed to be representative, and these people are not doctors, but even if they were, it's just an opinion. And obviously this malady, even though it is done that in such a way that older people die. I got a story to tell you about this that is just incredible. The same moron, this Governor Whitmer, you remember the story about the guy that goes in and beats up the old person at the rest home? Well, you probably thought, well, that guy is in there. He's a black kid, 18 or 20, and he's pounding on some guy who's about 80. And how did they get together? Governor Whitmer sends this kid to this rest home, to this retirement home, because he's got COVID. Can you imagine that? I mean, that is the craziest, meanest thing that I've ever heard. And my understanding is that Cuomo did the same thing. They're both sending, and they must have shared the idea with one another, but they're both sending people who are younger into retirement homes to do their protocol to be in isolation. So what happens? All of these old people are going to catch it and die, because that's who dies. I can't believe this. Cuomo and Whitmer need to be removed from office. It was the craziest, the weirdest, the meanest thing that I've ever heard of. And it really got me upset. I hope you're upset too. All right, so what do you think the economy is going to do? Because I heard Mike Huckabee say on his show that a person from the Obama administration, who now teaches at Harvard, had said, you're going to see the best recovery in the history of the United States, the best numbers. So I don't know. I don't have a feel for it right now, because we've never been through anything like this. But Colin Kaepernick is this guy that, you know, he was the kneeler. And I'll recount the story in case you don't know a few of the details. He was playing for the 49ers. He had taken the team previously to the Super Bowl. Young guy, very good quarterback, a running quarterback. And he was benched. He wasn't starting anymore. And so during that time, he decided to start kneeling. Now, I'm not aware, or I've never heard Colin Kaepernick, who I think is, I don't know, he's part black or he's all black, but he was raised by a couple of white people named Kaepernick, which is how he got that name. But apparently he lived a very sheltered life, and he started dating this lady named Vanessa Diab, who's from Egypt, and it is my understanding that she's Muslim and a communist or a socialist or something. I mean, basically everybody in the Middle East who's not Israeli is socialist, because that's how those countries operate. So anyway, the NFL owners and managers had a conversation and said, we wouldn't want this guy on our team. Now, as you recall, they made a big deal about him not getting picked up by any teams, but the fact of the matter is he was not starting in San Francisco, number one. Number two, they were going to hire him, and this is never mentioned for some strange reason. In Baltimore, they were going to hire him, and his girlfriend ended up sending out a text that portrayed this famous linebacker that they have, who's just the face of the franchise, as an Uncle Tom. And so he told the owner, and the owner's like, we're not hiring this guy because he's, you know, he's still acting up. It's better for him. He makes more money maybe from Nike, but now he's involved in the George Floyd thing. And he now is offering to pay for an attorney to represent Floyd. So this Colin Kaepernick, I wouldn't hire him to be, you know, the guy that, you know, sops up all the water after the locker room's empty. I think he's a terrible person. He only thinks about himself. Hasn't been in the NFL for 4 or 5 years. He's a baby. He thinks that all of this stuff is about him. He is a person who, without paying the price of having been a victim of anything, now thinks he's the face of black agreement in America. I don't like him personally, and I wouldn't want to watch him on the field. So I think it's a good idea nobody hires him. But the main thing is, he was set up for the linebacker is Ray. I can't remember what his name is, but if you're a football fan, you know who he is. He was a devastating linebacker for many years, and in Baltimore, played on the Super Bowl team. He's in the Hall of Fame, and he was helping Kaepernick get into the league, and then all of a sudden, his girlfriend, who was apparently wears the pants in the family, stated that this Ray, gosh, I wish I could remember his name, but was an Uncle Tom, if you can imagine that. So that's why I wouldn't pick him. I wouldn't pick him up myself. All right, so let's get back to this story about Floyd, George Floyd. Now, there's a few wrinkles in the story. It's my understanding that, Floyd was inebriated when he was picked up. He probably was. He had tried to pass a counterfeit $100 bill. He probably knew it was counterfeit. I accept that. But then these guys start kind of getting the moving this guy around. And you know what? I was thinking about it. It kind of reminded me of a cat playing with a mouse that was half dead. You know, sometimes these animals, even wild animals, sometimes catch prey and they play with it for a while because they don't know any better. But these cops were all sitting on this guy or standing on him. And he ended up dying, and he called out to his mother, who had died 2 years before, on the same day, I was informed. I don't know if that's true, but it would make the story even more tragic. But and he called out to his mother twice. And I'm thinking, you know, this is not the kind of country we're supposed to be. I mean, for a guy to be tortured in the middle of the street who hasn't done any violent crime and then dies, and then the cops act like it's no big deal. That's terrible. And anybody who saw that, you know, your heart had to break when you see this guy laying on the pavement. His face is in the pavement. He's peed his pants. Don't the cops notice that? He's peed his pants, and he's got a bloody nose, which says to me that he's having serious problems. And he just keeps saying, I can't breathe. Now, why is trying to get a breath something that the cops can't, you know, the cops have to pretend the guy's lying, right? Oh, he can breathe fine. He's just saying that. And then he's dead on the ground. He's unresponsive for minutes. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible story. So this cop has been arrested for third-degree murder. And, you know, I'm an attorney, so I could tell you why it's not second- or first-degree murder. First-degree, as everybody knows, is premeditated, meaning when he pulled over, when the cop pulled him over, he meant to kill him, which, you know, I don't know anybody who's saying that. It's just the cop is cruel and stupid. And it's not second-degree murder. Second-degree murder is an intentional killing, but it's spontaneous. You know, it's the kind of thing where somebody makes you mad and you decide you're going to kill them on the spot. It's not premeditated. So third degree murder would be a reckless homicide. So I think that they could get this guy on that. But I think all of these cops need to be, they've already been fired, but they need to be convicted. They need to be arrested. They need to be prosecuted. They need to learn their lesson. The lesson needs to go onto TV. It needs to go into the annals that we don't accept this type of thing anymore. Now, my question for you is there a difference in how blacks and whites are treated? Or Asians, for that matter, or Hispanics. Yes or no? I have black friends who tell me absolutely yes. They're watching all the time. Now, here is the other side of that, is just to say that it doesn't happen. Everybody's treated the same. Or the more nuanced argument is that the crime rate in the black community is higher. Now, if you talk to a lot of the people that I know, they'll say, yeah, it's higher because we're treated differently. And I asked a friend, I said, my friend Roger, I said to Roger, I said, he asked me what I felt about this, and I said, I think it's terrible. I mean, of course it's terrible. And we had first started talking about this Aubrey guy that was shot by the two, the father and the son in Georgia, whereas this other one happens in Milwaukee. The one in Georgia, another terrible story where this guy's jogging down the road. I don't know why. Of course, the reason is, I was going to say, why did he run into this truck? Why did he run towards it? But he didn't know that he was going to get shot. But, I mean, I guess somebody tried to, the guy that took the video in Georgia is involved in the murder, too. He tried to stop him so he could talk to him. And then he was obviously in touch with the father and the son, who then were ahead to catch him. And I think what happened at that point is there was an attempt to stop him to find out if he was supposedly involved in these little burglaries around the neighborhood. The guy wouldn't stop, the guy that was shot, because he didn't have a gun. And these people who were trying to talk to him were carrying guns or pistols or shotguns. And so he was afraid, and so when the guys came up to him with a gun, he grabbed at the gun and fought with them because he didn't want to just get shot, but he ended up getting shot. So anyway, of course, that there's no excuse. There's no defense for that. There's no defense for this thing in Milwaukee. But I was talking to Roger, and I said, and he said, would you admit that we are treated unfairly? And I said, yeah, I mean, in these particular cases, how do you argue that? But there is one element that people should be aware of. There is a lot more dysfunction in people that are raised without fathers. And something like 75 or 80% of black kids are born out of wedlock. So many, many, many black people that grow up without really knowing their father, which is in and of itself tragic because everybody wants to know their parent. Parents, you want to know that you were, I mean, kids are not looking for a lot, I think, to be happy. They want to live in a safe house, one with enough food, you know, with the air conditioner and the heater working, and they want to spend time with their parents. They don't want their parents to be overly emotional or violent or angry people. They want a warm relationship with their parents, but they want to know both of their parents, and they want to know what is a main question that people ask was, I wanted. And if you don't know who your father is, you can't answer that and say, I know that my father wanted me, because you're not in contact with him. He doesn't act like he wanted you. So I think a lot of these people in the black community, and this applies to every other community, it's just more statistically in the black community, there is a sense of rejection or anger or depression over the issue. And it is tragic. And the percent of people who have problems later in life who are not in contact with their father when they're growing up, it's very high. It's many times higher than a person who grows up in a two-parent family. And so I said, you know, I see maybe part of it is racism, or it is prejudice, and maybe some of it is this other stuff. I mean, I think we're all influenced by different things. So here's my problem with what's happening. There's no connection between this guy being killed by an idiot, a mean, a cruel, stupid cop, who actually his wife is divorcing him now, and I don't blame her. There's no connection, no direct connection between rioting and this guy getting killed. What happens in these riots? First, there's a peaceful protest, and these people walk along and they do their thing. And then there is somebody steps up to the plate and throws something and breaks a window. And then somebody else comes along and breaks another window, and then pretty soon they're inside the building where they're breaking windows. And they're going in and they start taking stuff. Now, how does stealing from somebody who has a business that you don't even know, how does that, it's not justified. So you're going along, you're angry, and so are you not telling me that the people who break windows and enter places and steal stuff, like there's this Target store, it was stripped to the bone, it was stripped bare. And they went into Target and they took stuff and then they took more stuff. Are you saying that is supposed to be a sacrifice that they get because somebody who's in their race is mistreated or killed? So this is an opportunity, right? I mean, are these people going along, I'm very angry, I'm upset, we were not treated right, and therefore we're going to break this window, we're going to protest, and then we're going to go steal all this stuff. So they broke into a bank. And they broke into Target, and they went in with hammers, and they pounded the cash registers to pieces to get money out of it. And then, you know, there's some lady who was trying to stop the so-called protesters that are just thieves at this point, and she's in a wheelchair trying to block people from going into the door. Why she would do something crazy like that, I don't know, but she was being choked and pushed and dragged in her wheelchair. And then somebody came up to her with a fire extinguisher and just blasted her like flocking a Christmas tree. And so as I'm watching this, and if I'm anything like you, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm looking at these people and I'm starting to feel angry because this is not a logical reaction to this guy getting unfairly hurt or killed. I mean, what did Target have to do with this? What did Dollar Store General, which was burned to the ground, or O'Reilly's, automotive? And so, from what I understand, about 200 buildings were burned. Maybe not burned, but they were looted, at least looted and knocked around. Now, they lit the police department precinct on fire. And was it the second? Was it the third? It was, I think it's kind of a small number, but all right. So the mayor, for some reason, he seemed like a very young guy if you looked at him. He looked like he was maybe in his 30s, he looked like an actor to me. Kind of a good-looking white guy. How he got the job, I guess he ran for it, and, you know, maybe it's like getting a job as an actor, you know, people see you, they think you look smart or something. So anyway, he got up there and said something needed to happen, and he was very woke. And then the next thing I hear is as these people are gathering in the streets to protest and it turns violent, there's no cops there. There was initially a few cops. And I believe the mayor, and if I'm wrong, I'll report it tomorrow, but I believe that the mayor had said that for the cops to stand down. So here's what happens. No cops get hurt, or the initial cops that get hurt go get tended for their wounds. But then you've got streets full of angry people, and you don't know who they are. According to some of the reports, most or all of the people come from other cities, other places, because the people that live in that neighborhood don't want it burned to the ground. So you got this situation, and I mean, it's absolutely terrible. And it is an abdication of authority, of responsibility to leave. Now, the cops, obviously, they're working for somebody else, and they're in a structured environment. If they're told to leave, they leave. But I don't think that they were prepared. The mayor of Milwaukee wasn't prepared. So maybe nobody, you're thinking, maybe nobody could be prepared for a situation like that. I totally disagree. The art of leadership, the art of statesmanship is being ready for unknown events that are at some level predictable. So, for instance, a 100-year flood, there should be some preparation. Even if you don't see it in your lifetime, there should be some thought given to a 100-year flood, right? So they had this 100-year or 300-year flood up in Michigan, and it broke two dams, and then it ended up flooding Dow Chemical. And now they don't know if there's going to be this giant spill. But anyway, you see my point. You can't not be prepared for this stuff. So how could they be prepared? Well, what was the problem in this situation? The problem was you have a very large group of people that are angry, and some of them are violent. And many of them are rioters and looters. So the problem is numbers in some sense. I think what you do is you've already talked to the governor about what happens in a situation like that. Now you talk to the head of the National Guard, and you also have compacts and agreements made with other big cities to borrow a few of their cops. So what if you called 20 different cities and said, loan me 10 of your cops? So that's 200 extra cops, right? Now, you might say, well, no, they're not going to loan the cops. I think they probably would, actually, if you would give them a waiver and say anything that's attributed to mistakes by the police is not going to be put on you because it's an emergency. But listen, that doesn't even really touch it. You've got state cops. You've got sheriffs. You've got county sheriffs in every county. And then you've got police in every city. Then you've got National Guard. You've got federal National Guard. You've got federal cops of various kinds. So, and if you were watching today, you saw that some of the police that were, I think, in Milwaukee, unless I was looking at a different city, but they had sent over Secret Service. So, look, you could get 500 cops over there if you needed to. What I think is important is you take control of the situation. You get your people with rubber bullets and tear gas and with batons and with shields with protectors, and you start moving down the street, and you get people to disperse, and the ones in the front who want to come up and act like they're real tough, you shoot them with a rubber bullet. And the next one that comes up, you shoot with a rubber bullet. And pretty soon you have 5 or 10 people laying on the ground or off on the side nursing their wounds. And you say, you know, do you want to, you want to continue this? And I don't think that group of people is going to make a rush at 50 or 100 cops. But, you know, you can't just say, we're going to disappear. This is apparently what the mayor did. We'll disappear until they get over their anger. You can't do that. I mean, it's just to see these people out there doing whatever they wanted And then with this idea that that was the response that they had to have is just, and then there's this guilt trip. Well, you know, you white people screwed up. And therefore, you've got to accept all of this looting and then you can pay for it. Well, I tell you what is going to happen. This is a poor neighborhood that this happened in. So I'm thinking half or maybe most of the businesses are not going to return. They didn't do anything wrong. And how do you abandon a precinct if, you know, if it's surrounded by rioters? That's when you call in the state police. I mean, you could get 10 or 20 state police there because, you know, state police aren't just on highways. They're in various cities as well. You get the state police down there and they come in from behind these people and they have their riot gear and get one of these trucks down there that sprays water on people, you know? So this reminds me of this lady that was in Baltimore. The mayor who was and all of these leaders, I think, are kind of similar, whether they're COVID mayors or leaders or governors. They're all caught up in the idea that they're in charge and their opinion matters and they have authority. And I would say these people misunderstand what authority means. And what power and everything is, you know, authority, according to the traditional Anglo-American idea, means that you have authority that is loaned to you for a while. So you don't have any right to get up there and act like a hotshot. And so when you make decisions for everybody, it shouldn't, number one, be a decision that you and your family break and then laugh at everybody, what idiots they are. And you should remember that you've got a burden to serve people. I mean, that's the problem in America. Does the governor in Michigan act like she's serving anybody or serving herself? And she gets up to complain about how hard her life is, which is maybe one of the worst things you could ever hear. So I'm looking at Baltimore, and the mayor was Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and if you recall her, and I mean, all of these people have the same attitude, and this is what bothers me about this attitude, is it comes across as it's a burden. You know, I agreed to do this job. I didn't agree to work on a riot. I'm burdened by this. I'm bothered by this. You need to be grateful that I'm here. No, that's not it. The way it should be is, man, I am so happy to have this job as mayor or governor. I'm thrilled. Now, we're going through a crisis right now, but you know what? We're going to get through it. You know why? Because we have a plan. Now, here's what the plan looks like. I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but, you know, the thrill of my life is serving you people, and I know that together, if we join together, if we work as a team, and bearing in mind that I'm not perfect, but if we work as a team, and you're not perfect, but if we work as a team, then we're going to make it, because together we are pure genius. All right, so Stephanie Rawlings Blake gets up one day in the middle of this riot over Gray, this guy that was in the back of this van. I don't know if you remember. And he had been driven around in such a way he wasn't cinched down. And he was He was knocked around and he ended up dying. His last name was Gray. So there was a riot as a result of this. He's a black guy, you know. And there was a riot, and she said that, and she said it on TV. She said it when she was being interviewed, that she wanted to give the rioters enough room to express themselves. And I mean, that is just one of the worst things that you could say, because it communicates to everybody that you're standing down the authority. And it was stated that the police disappeared in Baltimore too. You can't have a good outcome. You know, it's not an attack from the USSR or China or any other place where people have heavy armaments and, you know, tanks and bombers and everything. It is a collection of a bunch of angry people that are, for the most part, either unarmed or lightly armed. And you can't have the police just step away from their responsibility. Because what about all the innocent people? What about all the innocent shop owners? How are you going to have a city if you don't have any you know, businesses to meet people's needs? Now, here is another mistake this lady made. Stephanie Rawlings Blake. They asked Larry Hogan, the mayor, why he didn't send in the National Guard, why he didn't send troops down there. And he said, the rule is, I can't do anything like that until I'm asked. I was never asked. So there is this riot going on, this very violent and this highly destructive riot going on over this guy that died, and this moron, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who is just another aggrieved leftist politician who acts like the sun shines out of her rear end, and she's got something to prove, or she's too stupid to know better, didn't put in a request for the governor. So it was a disaster. And all that is left is excuses, and she acts all self-righteous. So we're going back to this news for Milwaukee, and there were mistakes made. The mayor had no emergency plan. He had done no emergency preparation, or if he had done it, and you know, you might say, what do I know? How the heck am I sitting here defaming this guy? Well, we do know. Look at the pictures. There's no cops in the pictures for the first couple of days. Or in a lot of the pictures, they're not. And it's generally agreed that the cops disappeared. So how is that part of your response to a tragedy or a crisis that you send the cops home because it's too hot? You know? How can that decision give birth to a positive outcome? You know, let's just say that there is organized crime in your city. And let's just say that they are given your name falsely on accident, whatever, that you had turned somebody in their movement in. And so a bunch of these people came over to your house, heavily armed, and you called the police, and the police drive out there and see what's going on and leave because it's too dangerous. I mean, cops are hired to deal with danger. They're trained for it. So the cops were the only group of people who every single one of them was armed and had shields and had tear gas and bullet resistant vests. And they were told to go home. And so what happened? The rioters went over to the precinct and did them the favor of burning it down. You think I'm being too hard, right? So what happens when people see this is people in other cities try to go burn down police headquarters. Why? So here's the main thing that I want to get to. There is a lot of leftism, of socialism, of Marxism that's going on in the background. And you might say, Kelly, O'Connell, the Cold War ended decades ago, and you need to get with it. You need to get off your anti anti-communist horse and get re-educated. I am telling you because it is the only explanation that makes any sense because of all the facts. Excuse me, that these riots are part of a larger plan. So where did these rioters come from? They came from other cities. How did they get there? How would they know to get there? Because somebody sent them over there. So you've got a couple of groups here. You got Black Lives Matter. But you've got a couple, you've got Antifa. Now, I'll just tell you a little bit about Antifa. Antifa was started in the late 1980s, and it was fighting back against skinheads. And so what they stand for, Antifa is short for anti-fascist. Now, fascism is technically the theory that was used by the Italians and the Nazis during World War II. But this isn't really fascism like that. It's people who are on the right. Pardon me. People that are on the right that are hated by people on the left, and Antifa shows up and is not afraid to use violence because their argument is you have no right to free speech because you took our free speech away. So we're not giving you free speech, and we're not only that, but we're going to fight for it. So they're not afraid to mix it up, and it's sad, you know, in a way it's really sad because a lot of people have been damaged by Antifa. But I know that Black Lives Matter, I believe, started the riots or started the protests in Los Angeles. So there were other protests in other cities, and in Portland, a group called PNW, which is Pacific Northwest Youth Liberation Front, was involved with the violence there. So, you know, there is this idea in Marxism, if you get into it a little bit, and what you'll find out is that Karl Marx believed that no person or no socialist revolution could happen without violence, or socialism would never come without a revolution. The main thing to him was revolution. So why would he believe that? Well, number one, don't forget that they were riding in the mid-1800s early 1800s in Paris after the French Revolution. And what they learned in the French Revolution is that you use violence to overthrow a society, which didn't really happen in the same way in the American Revolution. But Marx saw this as the best way to get your ideas out there. And if you didn't use a revolution, if you didn't use violence, it would never happen. So you've got all these people that are willing to do unscrupulous things, tell lies, cheat and mislead. And so if you look deeply enough, and you're going to think this is crazy probably, but if you think about it a little bit, if you think about what the people believe, what did Obama believe? He was raised by leftists. He was essentially a socialist. He was going to change America, right? And he had a problem with capitalism. That's why he did so much to increase the number of regulations, which Trump has been trying to get rid of. But he wanted to encourage us to be more multinational, more global. Trump comes along, freaks everybody out. Nobody thinks he's going to win. All of a sudden, people realize there's skeletons that are just laid out around the White House. So they send in the FBI to go after Trump's people to start a Russian investigation. Now, after 3 years, it is realized, it's publicly stated that there was no Well, now we've really found out there's no evidence for this. And Michael Flynn, General Flynn, was completely set up by the FBI. And now General Flynn, the crazy thing is the government concluded that Flynn was set up, never broke the law. He had pled guilty because he was out of money and they were threatening his family. So what happens? The judge in the case, Emmett Sullivan, refuses to accept the government's statement to dismiss the case, and now he's at war with the government, with the federal judiciary. He's brought in another judge to decide whether Flynn is really guilty, even though they don't have the original document that they wrote down what Flynn stated, which at this point is absolutely essential. And he's hired his own attorney. Now, when have you ever heard of a judge hiring their own attorney to defend themselves on the bench? I mean, it is truly the craziest thing that I've ever heard of. So, anyway, you've got Black Lives Matter that was put together by three lesbian Marxists. And then you've got Agitprop, which is agitation and propaganda. And a quote on this is, communists often talk about crucial importance of revolutionary agitation and propaganda. So propaganda is putting out false information, misleading information, mischaracterized statements to defame your enemies. And then agitation is to try to get people to act. So an example is the communists spent 2 years agitating the residents of Watts in California before they finally blew up in a riot. So this little clip says, and with good reason, together agitation and propaganda are a mighty and indispensable weapon in the party's revolutionary arsenal. And so basically saying, of course we use propaganda, of course we use agitation, because we are trying to overthrow the world and make it a better place. Now, another thing that I found was Mobocracy, which you may not have heard of. I hadn't heard of it. Yeah, but communists use Mobocracy. They try to start riots and mobs so that they can attack the police. And because the police are a problem for socialists and Marxists, because they're essentially an unlawful group, and they can't have police hanging around because they're trying to change society. So some of the objectives from the Mobocracy approach, use civil rights demonstrations to provoke violence and riots in targeted cities. Number one. Number two, blame riots on police brutality, confuse public, spread hate, the police propaganda. Three, frighten and isolate Negro voters. This is a very old, this is like a 50, 60-year-old pamphlet. Frighten and isolate Black voters or Negro voters to vote in a radical bloc for candidates who will scrap the Constitution and set up a new order. And four, demand civilian police review boards in hopes of removing police from under the discipline and control of the people's elected officials. So, now here's another part of this Black National Agitprop. When the Marxists tried to recruit Black communities and promote evolution, they promised them not just equality, but that they were going to create a Black state in the South. They were supposedly going to take places like Mississippi and Alabama and other places, maybe a quarter or a fifth of the country, and give these entire states to Black people. And I guess anybody who is not part of that group would just have to move. I mean, if you think about it. Now, there was a lot of Marxism in those days. The Marxists were agitating the Black communities to riot, and the Black Panthers were Marxists. Now, Antifa, anti-fascism, comes from the 1980s, and a statement that they make. Antifa revolutionaries are almost always anti-police, but as anti-capitalists with a sort of police abolition lens, they view the police as problems, as defenders of the capitalist order, and also too often sympathizing with the far right. So, anyway, you know, you've got this background which would seem to explain so much what has gone on. I mean, the terrible Russia investigation that was a hoax, the impeachment investigation that was a hoax, and all the lies, and all of these people in either Obama or Trump's administration who turned against Trump, who went after Trump, and publicly said, like John Brennan, like James Clapper, like these people that got up in these hearings and stated that, or they stated mostly on TV that they considered Trump to be a Russian asset. Now, never made any sense to me because Trump had his own money, number one. And number two, who's Russia these days? So they went under oath, and when they were under oath, every single one of them said under oath, I have no evidence that Trump is colluding with Russia or has done anything for Russia. But these people were tearing him up in the public spaces. And so they were using agitation and propaganda to defame Trump. And it's still, you know, it's still around today that many people hate Trump's guts. Many people who thought that they were smarter than the average person, who were much smarter than conservatives or Republicans, and they thought that they had discovered, this is the kind of the sly and clever part of this, is the Democrats who were doing this, the leftists, or at least the people that were helping out James Comey in his attempt to get rid of Trump, were communicating facts to people so that they would think they were smarter and they knew the real story. And that they knew for a fact that there was cooperation, there was collusion, there was working for Putin. And, I mean, when I heard it, I thought it was crazy because it didn't seem necessary. I didn't see any excuse for it, any justification for believing that. But probably 100 million people, I mean, what are there, 300 million people in this country? Probably 100 million people believe that Trump was just an evil person. And so, I mean, you just basically, and by provoking him, and the fact that, if you think about this, how did Trump lose the election for the House last time? He lost it because so many Republicans believed these lies and thought Trump was going to lose. And so they were... they were reluctant. They didn't want to stick their reputations out there. They didn't want to lose. So many of the incumbents declined to go for re-election that Democrats won, but it was all based on lies. And so anyway, I see this national protests, which don't achieve anything. I mean, what does rioting and stealing and burning and, you know, attacking cop cars and smashing them, how does that help these people? You know, black people who were involved in this are upset, and some of them are white. There was a girl in Brooklyn who threw a Molotov cocktail, which is a glass jar with some accelerant in there, alcohol or gas or whatever, some flammable liquid. And you have a piece of cloth hanging out that's soaked with this stuff, and you light it and throw it, and it landed inside of a cop van full of officers, and then she ran. It didn't explode like it was supposed to. They ran after her and caught her. She's charged with 4 counts of attempted murder. She's 27. She's from Catskill, New York. She's white. And her sister, who is just 21, is arrested for tampering because she bit a cop in the leg. So, you know, I mean, these people that are woke is the problem. They think they're fighting for something beautiful, and it's a fake religion. Liberalism is a fake religion. Liberalism is a hoax. It claims to deliver justice and freedom and egalitarianism, equality, and it doesn't offer any of that. It's just offering stupid failure for a bunch of people that are not as smart as they think they are, but they're on the verge of ruining this country. Okay, so here are a few weird facts. Number one, Donkey Kong, the video game, got the name, his name, because his creator was not fluent in English and thought that donkey meant stupid and wanted to convey the impression that the character was a stupid ape. Donkey Kong. So, obviously, a lot better named Donkey Kong than Stupid Ape. The medical name for a butt crack is intergluteal cleft. Now, don't forget your rump is your gluteus maximus, so. And some people believe that they are, they're suffering from an order called boanthropy that causes them to believe they are a cow. They try to live their life as a cow. I know some people like that, Rosie O'Donnell, for example. Here's another one. The name for the shape of Pringles, you know, it's oblong, but it's curved in the middle. It's called a hyperbolic paraboloid, which makes perfect sense to me, although I can't verify it. Now, there is a McDonald's, which I was talking to a friend. I was telling him I thought it was on hard times, but there's a McDonald's on every continent except Antarctica. So what? Big deal. First toy to ever be advertised on TV, Mr. Potato Head, who is truly transgender. We need to bring him back. He can be anything you want him to be. A duel between three people is called a truel. Now, three people who get married is called a thruple, although in places where you can't get married to more than one person, which is most of the world, one person marries another, and then the third one gets hand-fasted, essentially, which is just a spiritual commitment. The stage before frostbite, you might ask, what is that? It's called frost nip. And then two tiny holes drilled in every Bic pin ensures that air pressure is the same on both inside and outside the pin, helping the ink to flow. And number 10, in South Korea, there's an emergency number, 113, to report spies. Wonder what the number is for South Korea. All right, so I really appreciate you calling. And I have one last question for you. Why would Obama agree to take part in this attack on General Flynn? And my answer is, number one, because he hated his guts, because he had already fired him, because he felt like Flynn was trying to make him look bad. The second reason is he's part of the Trump campaign. But the third reason is the most interesting, is that I think Obama freaked out that Trump was going to have the power, and he either convinced himself or just decided that he had to take out Trump. And so Trump has had a miserable presidency for 3 years because Obama went along with this attempt to take down the presidency through Hillary Clinton's Steele dossier, which was known to be false, and also that he had done nothing wrong, and Obama knew it, and Obama was going to send Flynn to prison for a long time, even though he knew he was innocent. So that's the type of person Obama is, just telling you, and he's going to get in more trouble, or at least he's going to be embarrassed. Thanks for listening in. It's about an hour after the show in 10 seconds, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a lovely evening. Kelly O'Connell, KO Radio, Knockout Radio. Ciao.